This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Evangelical friends to think that way. Because you look at the life of Jesus, it was a life of selflessness. It was laying his life down for others. It wasn't kind of saying, I've got the answer and you don't. It was like caring for people. And you look at the whole New Testament narrative, and I think of when I'm going to shut up after this and let you really hold forth, but I'm going to shut up on this last one. But I love when I was reading the book of Acts in the New Testament, where Paul came to Athens, and I thought, this is so cool what he did. You know, here were the Athenian people who were obviously in loved philosophic dispute, and they were very religious people. And instead of coming into town and saying, you know, everybody, I've got the truth. You're all losers. Come follow me. He didn't say that. He said, you know, you've been worshiping 13 gods, the sun, the moon, all these things. And there's one God that's an unknown God. I'm here to tell you about that one. But he was respectful about their commitment to their belief system, their faith. And I guess what I long to see on my side are people that are followers of Christ that really recapture a pretty powerful notion all through the Old and New Testament, for God so loved the world. I mean, he gave his life so that people could live. And I feel like so much of it is you know, we're berating others and doing things. So I'm back to that thing. I love what the theme in the Old and New Testament, you know, the great commandment. When the lawyer came up to Jesus and said, what's the great commandment? He said, it's to love God with your heart, soul, strength, and mind. That's something I think we can all agree on. But what's interesting about that, it isn't that I'm supposed to get you to love God. I'm supposed to love God. When I am focused on myself, there's a humility there that changes everything. Here's the most humble man I've met over here, Aman Majid. He's my leader. But, it strikes me that when we do that, when we humble ourselves, then we're open to people and ideas and things. When we're arrogant and stiff-necked, I think that's when we get into trouble. So I think, at least in my faith, I want to recapture the notion of God so loved the world. He didn't say just loving Christians or Jews. It's every person, every place. Just we're supposed to love with abandon, selflessness. And the other is the humility to say, I've got to change. Me, I've got to change today. And that is powerful in little and big ways. It says in this, and I think it's in the Psalms, isn't it? Pride cometh before a fall. You know, the whole idea of pride gets countries in trouble, the arrogance of certain things that we do in our foreign policy a lot of time. So many times it's driven by hubris and arrogance, and it seems like a great starting point is humility. So anyway, I share that. There's a op-ed piece. When we started this thing, Akbar, who loves to get things out in the press all the time, I'm a little bit the opposite on this, but he said, why don't we do an op-ed piece that describes our unique relationship? So we brought one here for you. If you have this kind of describes what we're trying to do with Buxton. And I think the unique characteristic, we're trying to figure out how to be friends on the journey. And that does, by being friends and really loving one another, doesn't mean you're compromising. It means you're being friends and caring and open to learning. So anyway, that's my opening thought.
Thank you, Ambassador.
So thank you. I brought some other friends here in case I ran out of ammunition. No, not that
okay.
I need ammunition.
Don't shoot. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. Thank you, first of all, for just coming. I always, time is very precious, and the older you get, the more precious it gets, because you're very aware of the grains of sand that are passing through your hourglass that is definitely a measurable number. So I'm always very thankful for people that are willing to just come and sit down and listen to what I have to say. One of the teachers of Yemen, Sheikh Abdullah Al-Haddad, went to a village, and he was a very renowned scholar. And after the dawn prayer, he came out, and just the whole village came out to greet him. And he stayed and shook every single person's hand. And when they were leaving, his companion said to him, Sheikh Abdullah, they would have been happy if you just gave them all one salam. You didn't have to spend so much time. And he said, the reason that they did that is they thought that I was a good man, and shouldn't I assume the same about them? So it's an honor always to have an audience. In terms of what I want to talk about, I would like to talk a little bit about Islam in America. A lot of people aren't aware, many Americans aren't aware, that Islam has always been in America. We Muslims came here with Columbus. There's even some evidence that there were pre-Columbian Muslims here also. But certainly even in De Soto, a picture that hangs here in Washington, D.C., in De Soto's discovery of the Mississippi, the picture has a Muslim in the actual painting, just to indicate the presence of Muslims. We tend to forget that Spain was Muslim for almost 800 years, and there were Muslims in Spain. The Inquisition officially closed in the 19th century, and there were Muslims that were actually prosecuted in Spain up to the late 18th century in the Albujaras Mountains. So Islam has been a European phenomenon, and it's certainly been an American phenomenon. The most recent studies indicate that probably around one-fifth of the slaves that were brought to the Americas were Muslim at certain periods of history. Sylvian Diouf, who wrote Servants of Allah, indicates that she believes that there were probably about 3 million Muslims. George Washington, in a letter that he wrote to one of his, I guess he was a gopher, really. He wanted him to purchase some slaves off a boat that had arrived. And he said they may be Christians, Mohammedans. He said Mohammedans first, which William James would have considered significant. He said Mohammedans, Christians, atheists, as long as they have a good countenance and good character. So he was an equal opportunity slaver. But I thought it was interesting that he said Mohammedans, because we know that there were Muslim slaves here. They were often educated. The Prince is going to air this year on PBS, I think in February, about a Muslim slave narrative. He ended up meeting the President of the United States and had an extraordinary experience in the U.S. and ended up going back. There were several Muslim slaves who were so articulate and well-educated, they ended up finagling their way back to their homelands. One of them, Suleiman bin Ayyub, who learned English in about 3 months, and he was a trained theologian, and they were so surprised at his arguments of why God was not three as opposed to one, that the Unitarians actually started having him go and give lectures to the Trinitarian Christians. So he ended up going back to England, and he was a parlor star for a while, and then he went back to his native Senegal. So you have, I'll just acknowledge the Honorable Congressman. Do you want to?
Well, I don't want to stop you in the middle of a sentence. Assalamu alaikum. Alan Wasalan, welcome. Thank you for coming to this most important discussion. You know, on the Hill, it's rare that a day goes by that there's something, that there's not something in the either the Hill or the Washington Post or some other media talking about the Muslim world and its relationship to the United States, issues around security, things like this. In fact, it's all too common of a subject, and yet it feels that we don't have a firmer grasp on the subject matters we should have. And yet it feels, even though it's a constant topic of conversation, that we don't know much about Islam. We don't know much about the Muslim world. We don't know much about each other as Americans, as we come from the various faith traditions that we come from. And yet we see people trying to make steps toward goodwill. During this last Ramadan season, we had a very... I think we had a good representation of the Muslim community. We had several iftar events here on Capitol Hill, also at the White House and in the Pentagon, And also, the House, for the first time, passed a resolution recognizing and commemorating Ramadan itself. And still, if I may just inject a note of realism, that's allowed, right? We have seen members of Congress make comments like there's too many mosques in America. And we have seen things said of that nature and worse. And so while not trying to sort of bring us down, we all want to stay positive. I think in order to have a productive and fruitful conversation, we ought to talk about some of the real issues too. And so with that, I want to return the microphone back to Sheikh Hamza Youssef and apologize for being late. I do have an excuse. We were in the middle of votes. And that fundamentally is my job around here, so I had to do that. But again, thank you all for coming. Welcome to you all, and I'll return the microphone back.
Well, I'm sure the good people of your district in Minnesota will be happy that they have a congressman that actually does show up and vote. So. My family's from Minnesota as well. I don't know if you knew that. My father was born in Duluth.
Right. Yeah.
And Chisholm, Minnesota, is named after my great grandfather. Yeah, he founded that city.
So. Well, that's the Iron Range.
He was an iron ore kind of. He owned most of the Iron Range. Yeah.
Well, if I could just add one point before you continue.
Okay.
The Iron Range in Minnesota is notorious for producing some of the scrappiest, toughest. People in Minnesota, so I'm not surprised that the shake comes from there.
I just have to get in on this. I went to a Vikings game once.
Okay.
So, what can I say?
I was just talking about Islam in America and the fact that Muslims have been here from the start, and we tend to forget that. There was also an immense amount of interest in Islam in early America, and I would argue that many of the founding fathers, and possibly mothers too, Abigail was certainly a brilliant woman, and John Quincy is John Quincy Adams because of his mother more than his father. They had the Quran in their libraries, the sale Quran, which I have an original copy. If they wouldn't let you use it, I would have let you borrow mine. It's the same year, 1734. Sale Quran is actually a reasonably good Quran. Many of them had read the biography of the Prophet Muhammad. There were several biographies available. Benjamin Franklin mentions in his autobiography about a group of prisoners that were captured by Christians in Georgia who were Christian Indians who surrendered in goodwill, and they were massacred. And it was quite a story and upset a lot of people because they were so badly treated. And Benjamin Franklin, in his autobiography, said they would have been better off surrendering to Mohammedans, because ever since Khalid was rebuked by the Prophet, Muslims have never mistreated prisoners. And I thought that was just a very interesting, because it's a very well-known story in the Muslim tradition. But for Benjamin Franklin to make an obscure reference like that and assume that his reader knew what he was talking about, I think is very telling. George Bush, the Reverend George Bush, who is a direct ascendant of the current president, wrote a biography of the Prophet. Unfortunately, rather mediocre and not very accurate, but nonetheless. So George Bush, and that's his name, did write one. There were also a lot of plays. There were a lot of plays. Many of the Christian abolitionists used white slavery in the Muslim world as a case against slavery here, that on the one hand, we attack the Mohammedans and accuse them of capturing Americans and enslaving them, and yet we do the same thing. The only crime of the Algerians is that it's not race that is determining the slavery. It's just simply that they're captured. So they use that as a point, just say we're complete hypocrites because we're always denouncing white slavery in the Barbary Coast, and yet we won't denounce black slavery in Africa and the Caribbean that's coming into the United States. So there was also a lot of, I think, intrigue. And there was a period in the 1830s where